The meaning of the word iwi. It roughly means people or nation, and it is and is often translated as tribe or a confederation of tribes. Social anthropologist and museum ethnographer Paul Tapsell says all too often Māori alienation from kāinga and whenua becomes a wider story of environmental degradation and system collapse with adverse social consequences. He founded the digital web service maori.maps.com, which helps reconnect urban-raised Māori youth to their ancestral communities. He has spoken to us previously about this matter, and today we're going to focus specifically on that word iwi. Tēnā koe and welcome back, Paul.
Tēnā koe, Kara.
Can you speak more, please, about our understandings and perhaps the different understandings of the word iwi?
Kia ora, Catherine. The iwi is a really interesting word. It actually does appear in the original Te Tiriti document, but it's used in relation as iwi kua, or the people of the crown, the people of the queen, the queen's subjects. And that's the one place it appears in Te Tiriti. The rest of the time, the words that are there that are pivotal, especially in Article 2, is whenua, kāinga, and taonga, but those who exercise control over those autonomous authority were the rangatira and the hapū, called tino rangatiratanga, as the active use of that action. So these hapū and the rangatira, that was how Māori organised themselves at the time, 1840, and prior to that, when the British first came in and looked to settle and be part of this imagined nation called New Zealand, which we've got today. But what they expected and what happened, that's another story.
It sure is. What's happened then to the evolution, I guess, of the understanding of the word or the use of the word over time?
Speaking from my own perspective, growing up in a very strong tribal area, and often we use the English word tribal, but when we flipped into Māori, we'd use hapū, whānau, and if we referred to iwi, it was often to our bones. From where are your bones? Where no hea koe, tō iwi. It was about where your dead were, and you're signifying yourself to that whenua. We talked about confederation, waka confederations. Interesting hearing about waka jumping at the moment, yes. And how our language is jumping across between the two cultures, which is fantastic. But in the translating across cultures, sometimes the deeper meanings are misremembered or forgotten. And so the concept iwi only really came into my consciousness in the late 1980s, actually, when I was in Rangi Walker's lectures, when this whole idea came up of an iwi, A, an iwi transition authority, and B, the Iwi Runanga Act, out of which came the whole iwi fisheries debate between urban organisations saying, hey, we need to be considered iwi alongside these big tribal confederations like Ngāi Tahu, who are saying we as iwi under the new act that recognises us legally, we wish to have access to those resources that were on offer at the time from the Crown. So,
where does it fit into the kāinga picture? Of course, we were talking last time, your most recent book, Kāinga, People, Land, Belonging. You've given us examples of how it is used. When we put it in the broader context, again, just explain where it sits, I guess, and just listening to you, different people will intend different things perhaps when they use it.
I mean, it's a long tale of the genesis of the concept iwi coming into the vernacular in the 1990s. But for the kāinga, for the hapū marae communities that became more and more impoverished post-World War II, main reason being A, loss of their whenua or control over their whenua, their surrounding lands, but more importantly, loss of their people, the tangata, who went into the cities and looked to survive and set up life as individuals, nuclear families, and often quite successful, out of which came the urban Māori authorities. Meanwhile, the hapū and the kāinga, they got kind of left out of that picture when we had the big debate between these big tribal organisations that started calling themselves iwi versus the urban Māori authorities that got recognised through the tribunal process as also being iwi and stuck in the middle and kind of falling through the cracks were 780-odd marae hapu communities throughout the country, unless either of those chose to include them in any of the settlement resources that were flowing from the Crown.
When you look at your great passion now, which is reconnecting people, actually, even before that, we talk about iwi affairs or iwi matters, and this comes back to one of your core messages, really, which is this: the indistinguishable link between Indigenous communities and their environments. And again, when we talk about something like iwi affairs, we're talking about environment matters, we're talking about housing and health and well-being in a holistic sense. It's not just a word to describe something or a relationship. It has a potency to it, yes?
Yeah, the iwi's become a very powerful word in a post-settlement governance context. And it's something to which the Crown can identify and redirect resources towards, be it housing, health, education, or employment within a Māori space. But what is missing is the layer that's deeper, where the reason why we've got lack of housing or issues around employment, etc., is because of the original extraction of our people from their whenua and being forced to live in urban environments. They were escaping a poverty back post-World War II that they'd had for two or three generations. And now today, those very same descendants of those people who escaped for a period are now entered into a new poverty cycle of living in rented homes in South Auckland or Porirua, East Christchurch, South Dunedin, and are struggling to just make ends meet, let alone own their own home or be able to afford health. So this iwi construct is their pathway to trying to access a better way of living. But at the very same time, their children are also trying to say, well, what actually makes us Māori? Is it being a beneficiary name on a role with an iwi organisation recognised by the Crown? Or is there something deeper, something that is far more important, back to the very whenua, the very identity from which our ancestors came? I mean, this is the tension.
This is the heart of your work too, isn't it? That too often Māori alienation from kāinga and whenua becomes a story for the individual, and a lot of your work is about trying to reconnect the individuals with whānau and whānau with iwi, with their ancestral communities. This was the point of Māori.maps.com to begin them on that journey. And as we said last time, you have witnessed very, very powerful connections, very, very powerful impacts when someone asks that question you asked and then follows up on it.
When I was at University of Otago teaching there, which is part of why we developed MaoriMaps.com, so there's one extra dot, there's MaoriMaps.com, when we would talk to our young people that were coming through university, coming out of urban environments, and then we opened their eyes to actually where their ancestors grew up and how they lived and the value system it represents, especially in a mātauranga sense, back to waterways and back to the health and the pharmaceuticals, the proteins, the carbohydrates. I mean, it's like for them, it's like I belong to more than just being a Māori identity, doing kapa haka or speaking te reo. I actually belong to this landscape in a way that embeds me in a nation, and I can contribute. But how to contribute when you haven't got access to that whenua? The journey starts with actually knowing who you are, where you come from, and it goes beyond just iwi. That kind of gets you just halfway. It's going to the next level. And that's why Māori Maps literally exists and is flourishing, because we do that linking to the front door, the front gate of the marae, and from that point, they can then engage with their very own whānau, their elders, and we hope in a safe way and understand the pain, the trauma, both those who have grown up in the cities have gone through, plus those still living in impoverished, often at home, struggling to have running water, etc.
As well as the power of those personal stories and those personal reconnections, another theme of your work has been how that alienation is also part of environmental degradation and system collapse. And was it recently that you gave evidence to the Waitangi Tribunal expert evidence about the National Freshwater and Geothermal Resources Inquiry. Can you tell us a little bit more about that work as another really important strand?
I think that at the very point we've got climate change occurring and it's impacting, as we've just seen in Nelson, we've seen up north time and again in the Taitokerau region, that the very heart of that impact at a whenua level, we've got a population, though dwindling, that carries a knowledge system going back many generations. And they often understand the catchment in a way that our local governments need to embrace rather than going through to a big iwi organisation based in the city away from the catchment to deal directly with those who have not only flourished in the past but have been impacted most directly, say high-level sea level rising up above their doorsteps now. These are the people that the real partnership on the ground, I think, really needs to start occurring again for the betterment of the whole nation. And we can't leave these Māori communities behind. They carry both the knowledge systems that are barely hanging on through Marae communities, but also they carry the future unique point of difference that makes New Zealand so special. So that's kind of where my thinking is going and the research that our team, Project Kāinga and Part of Plate, are working on. Not least, we're working with school kids and asking, do Marae still matter under a Marsden? And time and time again, the kids are coming back and going, yes, it does. How do we reconnect? What way can we be effectively part of the future that has Marae still part of our cultural branding, but at a very base level of whenua, tangata and our taonga?
It's very painful, and it must certainly be for you and many others, to see the threat of climate change to physically to many of the Marae in the country, many, many at risk of impact.
I was just home in Makatu yesterday and just seeing the old cliffs where our burial sites were being washed into the ocean now because we've lost the buffer of the sand that used to wrap around our Okure, what Captain Cook called Town Point, because he saw hundreds and hundreds of people up there. And today we can't even go out onto the old Upa, it's too dangerous. This is climate change impacting us directly. Our Marae is at sea level, and it's just a matter of time before the stock bank's going to collapse. We're going to have to be looking at relocating. A lot of our people have lived down in the wetland area. Now, this is happening time again, 100 times over across the country. It is painful, but I'm optimistic. I think if anyone can do it, it's our generation, and this is our time.
Ngā mihi nui, thank you. Professor Paul Tapsell, social anthropologist, museum ethnographer. The most recent book is Kāinga, People, Land, Belonging. And remember also he has the initiative, the digital web service, maori.maps.com.